Hi, my name is Agile, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon, and I believe you should too. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be French fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up Podcast listener, to this episode 144, if you can believe it, of the Gen X Grown Up Podcast. I'm John. Joining me as always, of course, you know that Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
Would not be a show without George. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
In this episode, we head to the theater to see the kind of chaotic bloodshed that only the most excellent assassin can deliver. Build a sweet Lego model suitable for intergalactic bounty hunting, and test play the beta for the fourth installment in a classic RPG dungeon crawling computer game series. That and so much more is coming your way this episode. First, though, as we always like to do here at the top of the show, like to check out some fourth listener email. Our fourth listener this time around, and maybe recently, I feel like we hadn't heard from Kun Mong in a long time, and now a couple of emails this month, chimed in. Kun Mong hit us up on Discord in reference to the synchronicity backtrack.
Oh, that's a little bit back, right? That we did that one.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, the mailbag is full. You got to get to the... Yeah, I'm working my way through it. You got to catch up. Kun Mong says, this had to have been my first cassette I ever purchased.
I believe it.
I thought I even still had it, but didn't see it in my small collection, so I guess it disappeared some time ago. Anyway, I wasn't heavy into music until around probably the summer before eighth grade. I was still 12 at the time. I will say that I wholly agree with you all on Mother. Such an odd song. Although, you know, we heard from Marcus, the other Marcus, the musician, you know, it kind of shed some more light on how it adds texture to the whole album. But as a standalone song, it's just weird.
It's weird.
Kun Mong goes on to say, I've never really looked into the meaning of the lyrics like you have, and I'm a little impressed by what you found. To me, this song was just, what?
That's what it was to me until we did the podcast.
Yeah, me too. speaking of meaning behind the lyrics, my favorite song from the cassette was Synchronicity 2, your favorite A-side song.
Good one.
I remember an eighth grade music assignment about sharing a song we liked and talking about it, what we thought the lyrics meant. I picked that song.
No.
I don't remember my grade on it, but it couldn't have been better than a C or a B. I should add that in that same class, a fellow student played his chosen song of Run to the Hills by Iron Maiden.
Wow.
Mm. That album was my very next purchase. I don't listen to Police anymore, but that was the start of my metal phase, and I still listen to Iron Maiden to this day. So.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess Synchronicity served as a gateway drug to Iron Maiden for Kun Mong. So, yeah, whatever.
Uh-oh.
Fair enough. Does that work?
Not
that
really sure that's how the
music?
Sequence of events went. I think it was more about the class than it was.
Perhaps so. Thank you for writing in, Kun Mong. We love that you did. We love every time any of our fourth listeners take time to talk about the show, tell us what we did right or wrong, or what memories we invoked for them. If you would like your email featured here on the show, it is so easy. Just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com or read every single one that hits our inbox. And most of them, like Kun Mong's, will eventually make the show. All right, with that good business behind us, let's jump into the body of episode 144 right after this.
Hip Pass Moto, sponsored by Moto America, is the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. From candid interviews with the top names in racing to providing insights into the trends and trendsetters driving the motorcycle industry, we have you covered. New episodes are available every Thursday at pitpassmoto.com and on your favorite podcast app. Ride on.
Be sure to subscribe to or follow Gen X Grown Up wherever you listen. And while you're there, rate and review the show too. It helps more than you know.
It's the natural time for a sun dance with the sun up above in the sky.
Introducing Sundance Sparkler, 100% natural fruit juices with just enough sparkling water. There's nothing else like it, and there's nothing else in it. Nothing added, nothing artificial.
We didn't add a thing that's bad, and you know that's good. So it's a natural time for a Sundance.
Let's get the ball rolling talking about media, as we always do here at the top of the show. Now, of course, this could be television or film or comics or music or books or whatever you've been checking out in the world of media. I want to start with you, Mo. What have you been watching?
Well, I just finished up the last show of the first season of a show called Shrinking. I think I was looking forward to it a while back.
Okay.
Apple TV Plus, right?
Yep, Apple TV. It was 10 episodes. Last one just dropped. The show is freaking hilarious to me. The dialogue is so funny. Same people who did Ted Lasso. Is one of the creators on that.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Everyone who's acting in it is just freaking amazing to me. I have to say, it's the most I've liked Harrison Ford in something.
Right.
Easily. He's actually like a sympathetic, like you're like, wow, I actually like his character. You know, you kind of remind me of George a little bit, you know, a little gruff, a little bit.
Wow. What? He said you look like Harrison Ford. That's what
No. That's not at all what he said. No.
I mean, everyone knows the basics behind that. You know, the guy's a psychiatrist. His wife had died like a year before. He's going through like this major depression and all these issues. Especially the season is him kind of working through that. And you think it's like not funny, but part of it is like he's helping his clients because he's a therapist. And he decides to just basically break a whole bunch of therapy rules. Like he tells people exactly what he's thinking.
I see.
Like, and he's like, you should leave him. You know, like he says, he is bad for you. You are in a toxic relationship. You know, I mean, just like just telling him exactly what he's feeling. And to me, it was just really entertaining. There are nice bite-sized episodes and the dialogue is freaking hilarious.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this takes a little bit of its of what it starts out as, you know, the guy's wife dying being the impetus for his change from Afterlife, the Ricky Gervais series from England.
Similar to that. Okay.
It's got that same kind of feel, like snarky, dark humor and that. And Harrison Ford, just in the couple of episodes that I watched, I haven't finished the series like you have yet, but you're right. He, for the first time, is tolerable in a role. I mean, no matter what role he does, he comes off like you just get the sense that on set he was a dick. But
he just always feels kind of pompous, right?
Yeah. Like
he just
kind
of, I know.
But it works in this case, actually.
Right. Exactly. Because he's the head psychiatrist of the whole place. And so he's kind of the main character's boss, so to speak.
Right. Mentor, boss. Yeah, that kind of thing. And but he's like gruff. And
and let me just underscore something that you said to make sure I understood. This is Harrison Ford in basically a situation comedy or a comedy of some kind.
Yeah. I mean, it's dramedy, I guess you call it.
I don't know
if
I've ever seen that from him.
Well, it's Apple TV Plus. They have a shit ton of money to spend. That's why they're getting these big name people in these really good TV series things, because it's Apple. Enough of us have bought their damn iPhones that they can afford to pay Harrison Ford to be on the TV show.
I know. I bought 7 or 8 at least, so I got my money already. That's 10 minutes of Harrison Ford's time I've paid for.
There you go.
But yeah, if you haven't checked it out, absolutely would. Okay. It's a nice, also kind of like a, like one of these nice, like just a nice show. You know what I mean? Like it's not, people aren't getting killed and all that kind of stuff in it. You know, it's just like, you know, like we had a show, like I forget which one it was, John, that we said was like just a good like palate cleanser show. Like you just want to laugh and just enjoy a show and not get too.
Yeah, some shows are like that. Like Ghost is like that. The new Night Court is like that. Some of those shows that like
Ted Lasso
heavy
is like that.
Yeah, Ted Lasso
is kind of like that. Yeah.
And that's what this one is as well. I think it's on that same kind of type of vibe when you watch the show. So again, if you get a chance, definitely check it out. But I'm really interested in what George thinks of this next one, because I have not seen it, but I really want to.
I don't. Excellent segue I have to use.
Okay.
Speaking of shows where people get killed a lot.
I was wondering if you picked up on that.
Yeah, I was wondering. Yeah, go ahead, George.
Good one.
So we're going to talk about John Wick 4. We've been looking forward to this for quite a while on the podcast. Yeah. I've been looking forward to it from the very first mention of the, like, they just showed the name John Wick 4 in the first teaser trailery kind of thing. And that was, I don't know, maybe a year ago something like that. But all right. Well, I'm going to use spoilers, John. So do your little doodly loop stuff or whatever so that the people can not get upset if they don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen this yet, just so you know.
Okay, so George threatened spoilers for John Wick 4 in this segment. And what ended up happening was we were really light on spoilers during the conversation. We did a really good job of restraining ourselves because Mo had not seen it yet. So if you want to listen ahead, if you haven't seen John Wick 4, just go ahead. And there's nothing really super spoilery. Like, we don't give away big endings or big twists or anything. We're very light on it. If you'd rather wait and listen to this one later, just jump ahead about 10 minutes and resume the show.
I apologize, Mo. I'm going to fuck your world up here pretty shortly because I can't talk about this movie without talking about spoilery stuff. I'll do my best.
Yeah, go for it, man.
So Keanu Reeves obviously comes back as John Wick.
Right.
The great thing about the John Wick films that I enjoy so much is their timing. None of them take place more than a few days to a few weeks from the previous entry.
Oh, they flow so one right into the other, basically. All four movies
seem to take place in about a month's worth of time. Oh, geez, maybe, yeah. Maybe 2 months in this case, because there's a montage at the very beginning with Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves. And it looks like that maybe Keanu Reeves has been healing from what we saw at the end of John Wick 3 for a period of time.
He's pretty effed up.
Yeah, he was pretty messed up.
I was thinking he needs a couple of days at least for his ribs to heal. Heaven's sake.
Right, from the fall. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, Mo, I'm just going to warn you. He gets even more fucked up in this movie.
I mean, it's to be expected.
Way, way more. Like, my wife, who she had not really watched the John Wick films, so we decided to have a John Wick marathon because she wanted to go to this with my son and I.
Okay.
So we watched John Wick 1 on Tuesday. We watched John Wick 2 and 3 on Wednesday. Wow. And we saw John Wick 4 on Thursday. And as we watched each movie, and as we were in the theater, every single time she would go, "That's just not believable. How many times is the car gonna hit him?"
She's so right.
And I had to explain to her, honey, it's not meant to be believable. Yeah. This is an action superhero type of story.
Yeah, absolutely.
John Wick is, yeah, he's grounded in some reality, but really most of his feats are superhero-esque. But the star of the film, outside of Keanu Reeves, who does a tremendous job, is really got to be Donnie Yen.
Oh, I love Donnie Yen.
Yeah.
Donnie Yen plays a role that just takes over the screen every single time he's on the screen. It's just ridiculous. He plays a blind guy again. So if you saw him in Star Wars Rogue One, he's playing a similar feeling character. But
he's a badass, though, right?
Not just a badass. Like... angry as fuck at his situation badass who doesn't want to fuck with John Wick, but knows he has to for certain reasons. Holy hell.
It's almost like it's so neat to see characters that aren't black or white here. He's a purely gray character.
Yeah.
Like anytime you see him on screen, you're not sure. Like, you know what his overarching motivation is, but you're not sure how he's going to act on it in this scene. Is he going to is he going to be helping you? Is he going to be hurting you? Is he going to be taking you down? Is he going to be saving your ass? Because he's got his own agenda, and ultimately that's the one he's going to try to satisfy.
Got it.
But the way he gets there is really interesting.
It's really fun too, because his agenda, as you put it, John, it conflicts with the people telling him what to do.
I know.
At times. And so he has to at times be on John Wick's side and at times on his own side. And it's back and forth, even sometimes scene to scene to scene. There's a great scene toward the end of the movie, Mo, that I really want you to get to see, because to me, it epitomizes the realness of the character more than any other scene in the movie. At the very end, there's going to be a showdown. You know, John Wick, always. There's always going to be a final fight, showdown, right?
Right. Yeah.
Right. It's like, these are the most softball spoilers ever.
I'm doing it.
Amazing. That's great.
But there's a scene where, you know, it's going to be Donnie Yen and John Wick, Keanu Reeves. They're going to be the two guys going after each other. And the bad guy, the real bad guy in the storyline, walks up to Donnie Yen right before this confrontation happens and starts to try and motivate him with some kind of speech. And quickly, like before the man gets more than two syllables out, goes, "Fuck off." Just like, and is right back to calm instantly. Like, he's calm. The guy comes over, "Fuck off." And then right back to calm. It's the best delivery of that line in any movie I've ever seen.
He had heard enough of his crap, hadn't he?
That's cool.
I can highly recommend this film.
Okay, that was my first question. Yeah.
I'm not going to say it's the best of the John Wicks.
I would agree.
The first movie is the best of the John Wicks. I think so too.
The first is definitely the best.
But I think this is significantly better than the third John Wick.
Okay, I agree. Thank you. Yeah.
It's probably on par with John Wick 2. It's very neck and neck.
I could totally go with that. I'm ready to go to the theater and see this now.
I'm completely aligned with you on that equation. I was thinking better than the last one. I came out of it. Not as good as the first one. Yeah, I put you right there. And I'm on your wife's side. There's something about the action in this movie. Look, I love the getting thrown into cars part you're talking about. I love the crazy over the top. How did nobody get shot? Look, he has a bulletproof suit and somehow he never gets shot in the head or the hands. How does that happen? It's amazing. But I was with him until midway through the scene going up the stairs. And I'm like, this is just ridiculous.
The stairway to hell, right?
Yeah. And the guy sitting three seats down from me, he was like your wife. He's like, oh, really? Come on now. But they were just pulling all the stops and going, let's do the most banana stuff we can think of. And that's what they did. And some of it's even more unbelievable than the rest, but still fun to watch.
Absolutely. And a lot of it are homages to other action films that the directors and writers are fans of. Like in the third film, which is arguably the least successful of the four films, in my opinion, but it's still a fun film. Mm-hmm. The scene where John Wick is going up the glass staircases in the mirror hall room, that's a direct homage to Game of Death from Bruce Lee, because Bruce Lee has to ascend the pagoda. Yep. And they do that in a lot of these films with John Wick, because they're referring back to their action star roots. And Donnie Yen is a tremendous action star. For those who are not aware, he's Ip Man.
Yep,
so if anybody is familiar with that franchise, that's Donnie Yen to a T. He's been in a few other things as well, but he just takes over the movie. And there are other tremendous actors in this. The new proprietor of the Next Continental you get to see, which is in Japan this time. That guy is a tremendous actor and a great screen presence. You've got, unfortunately, the rest in peace Lance Riddick, who is in this film as well. You've got Ian McShane.
Oh, yeah. Ian McShane. I mean,
tremendous actor.
Yeah.
And a much bigger part in this film, too.
Yeah. Bill Skarsgård, who plays the evil guy at the top of the evil guy list, he's tremendous. But Donnie Yen just kicks all their asses on screen, literally and figuratively.
My favorite thing about the John Wick movies, though, is like that whole mythos that there's this culture under the world that we see and nobody knows about it, which I thought the last movie kind of screwed up a little bit. The third one, that the head is some guy who lives in a desert. I'm like, really? Come on.
Don't worry. Be real here. That gets fixed.
We'll take care of that right away.
I am definitely going to see this. And thank you.
You won't even have your popcorn finished before that shit gets taken care of. Don't worry.
Awesome. Okay. I'm a happy guy. I'm definitely going
to
go see this.
Now, I will say, for fans of AMC theaters who go to see this there, you can take a look at my background for some hidden John Wick treasures that are going to be available to you in those theaters. I don't know that they're available in other ones, but they are doing a special collectible popcorn thing, you know, like a little popcorn tin, which is cute and cool. But the better one is they have released a set of four heavy metallic coins for John Wick 4. And they're not all just the coins that they pay each other with. That's one of the coins. But then there are three others related directly to this movie. Mm. And
like character coins or something.
Yeah. If you can get the AMC clerk to separate the two, because at my AMC, they were like, well, we don't really know how to do it, because it was literally opening night and they didn't even know how it was in the register yet. I believe that those coins are going to be $10 for you, because the popcorn tins generally are $17 and I paid $27 for both. So if you like collectibles, this might be a good one to pick up, because, well, you'll see when you see the movie. Might be a good time to pick up a collectible.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, that's fair.
Awesome.
Again, that was barely spoilery. That was amazing.
That was excellent. I wouldn't even worry about the whole spoiler thing, John. That was fine.
Yeah, maybe not. That was well done.
I went down a few rabbit holes with that. John has a specific rabbit hole to talk about next.
Hey, don't be talking about my rabbit hole. Yes, I do, though. I was looking forward to this. I'm sorry. I was looking forward to this the series last time we spoke. So the short of it is, if you enjoyed Kiefer Sutherland in 24, would you like to see a little more of that kind of? There's a new series on Paramount Plus called Rabbit Hole. Now, just like we had talked about that video game that's kind of like the Russian BioShock, that's an unfair comparison, but it's the easiest way to get into it and understand what this show is. They just premiered, and there are two episodes out, and I started watching it just on the fact that Kiefer Sutherland was in it. I'm like, I haven't seen him in anything in a while. I really enjoyed the 24, even though 24 kind of went off the rails in the end. It was a great series.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, again, promised to be kind of like that. There's espionage going on. And I will say that I watched the first 15 minutes and almost turned it off, because I was so bored with what was going on.
Okay.
He's kind of a guy who works in a clandestine for other rich people to manipulate stock prices. So he sets up gimmicks and meets people in bars and makes people accidentally meet to get photos of two people together. He's kind of a real jerk that works for rich people to make. And I think he even says at one point, I love making rich assholes pay to make other rich assholes lose money. Like that's his job. It's what he does. does.
So it's like a nefarious Robin Hood kind of thing?
Yeah, I guess. But okay. But it wasn't interesting was the problem. I'm like, is this what the show is? And I was almost done. But the lucky thing was I was multitasking. As I was getting bored with that, I was doing something else and I let it keep playing. And as if like on clockwork, like they could see me, like 2 minutes after I'd given up, this world gets turned upside down and you finally get some amazing stuff going on.
Okay.
What you think is happening and the people you've met, you know how you go to this fancy place where the guy makes a lot of money and says, you should work for us. You know, don't be off on your own, but I know money doesn't matter to you. And he's like real smarmy and you're like, this guy's going to be the bad guy later. What a swerve. He wasn't. Stuff goes down and he's in danger. The people he works with in danger. A woman he met in the bar is part of the danger. It's an espionage thing. But I will say the 24 comparison is not unfair, though, because when Kiefer Sutherland starts yelling at somebody and wanting information, boom, it's Jack Bauer. I mean, it's absolutely that guy again.
Gotcha.
Got it.
And it's episodic, right? So I don't feel forced to binge this. And I think back to the Tulsa King thing with Stallone that I was, it's almost that kind of thing. It's a high profile actor in episodic television and how I ended up just dying for the next episode to come out after watching two. And by the way, after you watch one, you're not going to not watch the second one if you make it through the first one.
Okay.
It's that kind of pull you through the show sort of thing. Yeah. So if you like that kind of like espionage and action and whodunit and conspiracy stuff, Rabbit Hole on Paramount Plus is a damn good show to watch. And I can't wait for the next episode to pop up, honestly.
Sweet. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I was not, and I don't know if I am yet, looking forward to it, but I know that if I decide to start watching it, I'll give it 25 minutes now.
Yes, absolutely. I think if you get to 25 minutes, you're in, actually. I don't think you'll be able to leave.
All right. Yeah. So we'll do something else for the first 25 minutes as we watch it.
Yeah, right, multitask. Yeah. Right. Right. Play Bejeweled on your phone and then until you get there. And then you'll be engrossed.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
You're listening to Gen X Grown Up. But if you have a friend who's not yet listening, why not? Tell them about us. They'll thank you later.
Your worst nightmare just came true. Mildew creeping over your gorgeous grout. Soap scum slithering down your tasteful tile. Thank heavens for Tilex Instant Mildew Stain Remover. Spray Tilex on mildew stains and they vanish with no scrubbing. Spray Tilex on soap scum, then wipe it out of existence. Don't let mildew stains and soap scum give you nightmares. Terminate them with Tilex.
So I'm doing like a lot of maintenance on my house. So all I've been buying lately is boring shit like paintbrushes and rollers. And so
Mo, tell us about your favorite paint roller.
I got nothing exciting to talk about today. So I'm going to toss over to George because I saw what his thing is and it is super cool.
Yeah, I've had a lot of women tell me that. Thank you for noticing, though.
Yeah, you know, hey, it's my job.
So...
Again, just like Harrison Ford, see?
Right. So on the last time we did a regular edition of our podcast, I mentioned that I got a Lego gift for my birthday. And I said that I also was allowed to purchase another Lego set for myself during my birthday weekend in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was going to talk about today. So it's Lego set 75292. Which is the Star Wars Razor Crest ship from The Mandalorian.
That's his first ship, right?
It is his first ship from the first season of the series. Right. Now, after in season two, he got the new one, which kind of looks like more like a Naboo fighter that's been retrofitted and banged up and everything. But the Razor Crest is the one that I first fell in love with. It's very much more of a Mandalorian type of ship.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, I think Lego and Star Wars both have recognized that because they have released three sets of the same ship. There is a small version, which is very tiny, comes with just a couple of the minifigs, and it could probably sit on your desk. Then there is the giant, like $900, super detailed thing that you would want to shine lights on in a museum after you build it set.
Right.
The set that I got is the in-between of those two. It's like $130, I think, or something like that, $140 that I got it for at the Lego store down there. I have not built it yet. As we discussed last time, I just am trying to figure out all my spaces so I can start displaying this kind of stuff better. Mm-hmm. But it is on the box, another gorgeous, gorgeous set. And it just feels like that Lego, time after time after time, is knocking these intellectual property models out of the park.
I can tell you from, I just took a quick jump on it in Amazon to look at it. And I can tell you the one thing it has, which I think is going to make this thing sell like crazy, is they have a Baby Yoda figurine.
They do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's one of the minifigs is the Baby Yoda.
That Grogu or whatever his name is. Grogu. Is that right? Grogu.
Yeah.
When you talked about that, you had got this Razor Crest. The first thing I did was just search before there was a link anywhere in our card. And I'm like, did he get the $700 one? This thing is huge and amazing. And it reminds me of like the big Millennium Falcon that they did. It was several hundred dollars, right?
Oh yeah.
Crazy. And then I look back at the number that you provided. And I'm like, oh, he got this middle of the road one, which it doesn't feel like not a big model. It just isn't the obscenely large, crazy model, right?
That's no, this is large. Still, its length is probably comparable to the width of a keyboard. It's still a sizable Lego model. And that's the thing that I've noticed with these intellectual properties. When it comes to building out these Lego sets, if it's a ship from like Star Wars or, you know, if they ever get Star Trek or whatever thing, they tend to like to have this mid-range $100 to $150 version, because for people in my financial situation, that's the top end that I can afford.
Yeah. It's like perfect pricing, isn't it?
Right. But the
it's
people
premium,
who are,
but not crazy. Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. People who are Lego nuts, and that's all they buy with any of their money. Like they say, oh, I could eat tonight or buy Lego. Okay, I'm going to buy some Lego.
Lego it is.
That's who they build the $7 to $1,000 price range models for. And trust me, there are plenty of those out there. If you go to any Lego store anywhere.
Oh, yeah, they're crazy.
They're going to have those, and you're going to look at them. You're going to go, oh, my God, that looks so beautiful, because they have it built in the display case with the right lighting in it. Oh, that's so gorgeous. And then you see the price tag, and you're like, oh, well, let's move along, shall we? Mm-hmm.
Do you have one that's little?
Yeah, exactly. And then they give you the little tiny ones that don't have quite the same details or any of that stuff, but they're still nice memory nostalgic pieces that you can sit on your desk at work, or you can put them on a little shelf in the bathroom or something like that, wherever you want to put them. Those little trinket toys are usually $10 to $20, depending upon the property and the size and how many pieces. They're very, very good at hitting all those levels to make people go, okay, shit, I got to buy it because I love blank, whatever the thing is.
I'm sorry, did you say you have a Lego shelf in your bathroom?
I do.
Okay, I want to clarify. You know, if you misspoke. Or, okay.
Did I hear that right?
No, I don't. Does everyone have one? I'm missing out.
Why would
out,
you
maybe?
Not have a Lego shelf in your bathroom?
You know, it's real estate that I have not capitalized on, so maybe it makes sense. Okay.
I said, John, instead of reading, he does Lego.
Well,
splash. Oh, no.
That's a little difficult. Yeah. The only bricks in my toilet are not Lego. Let's put it that way.
No, those are logs, not bricks.
That's true.
Oh, I'm sorry I brought that up. Anyway.
Okay, let's move along. Mo didn't have anything for his own segment, so let's move along to John. John, have you got anything available?
I do. Yes. You know, I went back. I was looking at things that I got for Christmas. Have I talked about this yet? And this is an amazing gadget that Santa Claus brought me at Christmas time. And the reason I wasn't thinking about talking about it on the show is because it's transparent to me most of the time, but I look at it every day. So it is not forefront in my mind. So first, I'm going to tell you what it's called, and you'll all be baffled. Then I'll explain what it is.
Okay.
It's the, you know, the Divoom Pixoo 64.
Yeah, I had the 63. What are you talking about?
Is that one of the spaceships in Star Wars?
It might be. So there's a company called Divoom, and they specialize in, among other things that they make electronics, and they make displays that use LEDs and multicolor LEDs to do things. It could be a little desk thing that reacts to sound and does a little waveform or whatever.
Okay.
This is one of their upper tier products called the Pixoo 64. And it gets its name for a couple of reasons. One is that it's pixel inspired. So this is a frame that's about 12 inches square that you hang on the wall and you plug it into the wall. So there's a little wire running up to it. Mm-hmm. And it has this grid of like 64 by 64 pixels on this, I think if I named it right. Yeah, this 60, that's where the name comes from. It's a grid of 64 by 64. And it has an associated app you connect to, and you could put anything on this. So I'm not talking about a digital picture frame. I'm talking about a 64 by 64 pixel art looking grid that can be moving dynamic artwork. It does have a speaker, like their lower end products, where it reacts to sound and it can move a waveform. You can even go in the app and draw your own little pictures and see it being drawn on this frame hanging on the wall. It has a million and one uses. The reason I asked for it for Christmas was because I saw another YouTube channel. This guy had this thing hanging in the back of his set that had a readout of like his YouTube subscribers and number of views and those sorts of things.
Now so you can link it in. Comes into focus.
Yeah. So you can link it into the real world and connect to like an endpoint from YouTube to get data. You can hit Twitter or Instagram, whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. And they have these pre-built scenes that you're like, well, show me YouTube stats or show me a Nyan cat or show me, you know, a rainbow or whatever you want to see on that frame.
I'd say, I mean, I'm looking at it, and it kind of reminds you of a very sophisticated light bright.
That's, yeah, in its appearance. Yeah.
Because it seems like you have the 64 by 64, but you have like an incredible number of colors you could use for each one of those pixels, whatever you want to call it. So I can see how that would be make some pretty cool pictures.
It does have some amazing pictures. And it's not just a still. Like, it could do full animation. There's tools where you can take video, small snippets of video, and it'll pixelate them into a little file that you can run on that thing and load it up through the app on your phone. Unlike a light bright, of course, you have to plug in little pegs.
Right.
But it has that same look of the individual little dots. It's not like, if you make them all red, it's clearly a grid of red dots. It's not a flat image. And it has that retro aesthetic. Plus, I can glance at it and see how we're doing on YouTube. Plus, it's animated. Like, it's like a ticker that says the number of subscribers and that kind of thing. But regardless of what you might need it for, if you have anything that you keep tally on, whether it's a stock price or anything like that, you can put any kind of data in this thing, hang it on the wall, and it's a real-time, living, animated, like, ticker thing that hangs on the wall.
I have a couple of questions, and I'm very distressed right now. So, my first question is: you talked about it being plugged in. Does it not have a battery that can be charged and then hang until you need to charge it again?
No, this needs to be plugged in. It's always connected when it's on. It's always connected to Wi-Fi, and it draws too much power for batteries, so it's impractical.
Okay.
Now what I did is I plugged it in. I put it on a smart hub so that I could have it turned off with my light, so it doesn't stay on all the time. But
that reduces my stress level because now I don't feel like I need to buy it for the purpose that I was thinking about buying it for, which it would be overpriced for that purpose, which was, I was thinking this would make a great thing that I could hang on the outside of my door when I'm in a recording session that I could just from my computer, you know, go to its program and say, you know, on air, do not disturb or something like that. Also, I was a little bit disturbed because I don't know what Santa Claus what his elves paid for it to get it to you. But right now it's on a lightning deal for like 60% off, 36% off. So I was like, damn it. I've got like 5 hours to decide if I need to buy this thing or not.
When it was new still. At its regular price, it's like $199.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So 128.
Yeah. So, I mean, even on a sale, it's not an insta buy. You need to have a purpose for this, or you need to ask Santa Claus for it, because the elves can get it for next to nothing. You know, they build their own stuff.
Right. Exactly.
That worked out. But I'm really happy with it. And even though I use it for a single purpose, like I said, I look at it every day, all day long. I glance at it, and it's again, anything you want to keep stats on, put it on there, or just as a decoration, probably overpriced for a decoration, but put live data in it. It's pretty damn cool.
Nice.
Sweet.
Are you tired of seeing your teen or young adult struggle on a path that clearly isn't the right fit? Is your teenager confused about which direction to take after high school? The future of work is changing rapidly, and our kids need to know all of the options available after high school so they're empowered to make the choice that is best for them. In each episode, we explore the latest trends that are shaping the opportunities of today and tomorrow. I'm your host, Betsy Jewell, and this is the High School Hamster Wheel Podcast.
Each episode of Gen X Grown Up has show notes loaded with links where you can learn more about our topics. And there's even more to see and hear over at genxgrownup.com.
What do you know about cranny? cranberries.
I like cushion sprays and it tastes.
What do you know about cran apples?
More fresh fruit flavor than ever.
Good for you. Tastes so good too. Cran apple.
The unique cranberry has essential things your body needs. So does cran apple, the better than ever cranberry apple drink.
Better tasted fresh fruit flavor.
Oh, hey, what do you know?
Now with fresher fruit flavor.
It's good for you, America, from Ocean Spray.
This is the main event of the podcast. For the three in attendance locally and the millions listening around the world, ladies and gentlemen, it's time!
Well, unlike the last segment, we all three have an entry in this right. segment.
Oh, that's
since
aimed at you,
I'm
Mo.
Picking on Mo for the last segment, I'm going to start with him. Have you been playing a game? I know you have because I see it on the list. So
that's
don't
right.
try to hide it. Just talk about it. Whenever you're ready to start, Mo, you can just start talking at any time you would like to start.
All right.
Take a breath.
I think I'm ready. Okay. So, yeah, I've been playing the Diablo 4 is what I've been playing. And I am a huge fan of the Diablo series. And the newest one, 4, and they haven't had a Diablo 3 come out. God, it was a really long time ago, actually. They haven't done a new one in quite some time. So the official release date is June 6th of this year. And what they've been doing is that if you pre-bought it, then every weekend they have an open beta that you can play.
So it's not even out yet.
It's not even out yet.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, from Friday to, well, Sunday, Monday morning, you know, I've been trying to get on this as much as I can because, you know, you have that limited window to get in there and play stuff. But I mean, any limited a little bit, like you can't pick every single type of character that you could be and all that stuff. But let me tell you, man, if you are a fan of Diablo, and I don't know, for those who don't know, it's basically like a top down kind of, I call it like isometric map mm-hmm. that you play, and you pick like a fantasy character, and there's a whole storyline that you're basically following, you know, and you're trying to build up your character, and you could do, you know, you go off and you have lots of side quests, like there's millions and millions of side quests you could do, and then you have a kind of a general story that you're trying to follow. Say it looks the same. They didn't mess up with that kind of play style. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, from what I've seen so far, I am loving it.
So I was going to ask you if you could describe what Diablo is for people out there, maybe mm-hmm. who haven't played it, which you did, which is awesome. But I am curious because I don't think I've ever played a Diablo game, which I know is to my shame, but
I'm not sure I have either.
Yeah. Is it turn-based strategy?
Mm-mm. Nope.
So it's live dungeon crawling?
Yeah, basically. And okay. Each character, and you could that's the thing is you could customize these things to death, you know, your characters as you build them up, like which traits you have. And you know, I picked a barbarian because that's usually the easiest one to start with. But barbarians can carry like 4 different weapons. Then you can decide to build up things that would make different types of weapons stronger. And I'm playing with the right. Xbox controller. So you have like 6 different attack buttons that you could use depending on which one you want to do. Some mm-hmm. you have to build up power to use. Some help you build power when you use them. And if you play magic users, a thief, there's a necromancer where you actually raise dead things to fight for you. It looks super cool, but it is a real time fighting.
So you talk about it. So it's not first person. It's mm-hmm. not third person. You said isometric.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the sense of like Gauntlet.
Similar.
But way, way better.
But better graphics. But
at a little angle, right? Not top down, but like top down, but tilted a little bit.
Right.
Right.
And you could get behind a wall, but they go transparent if you do go behind a wall.
Got
so
it.
You can see
yep.
it, you know, that kind of stuff. And the cool thing with this also is that, you know, you go into the world and other people are playing. Like you can see other people running around and you can decide.
Is that good or bad?
Well, in this one, it's good because you just go it alone. You can totally just play it by yourself and not just ignore everybody. Or they have some quests like there's like dungeons you go into, which are like, oh, go into the cellar of this or the mines of whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then as you're traveling, there's some areas where they guess they kind of built them for groups to fight.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So basically you see a bunch of people already in there fighting. You could jump in there, help them fight, and you get to shared rewards at the end.
Yep.
But you don't have to, but those are all optional.
That feels worrisome to me because I would be worried that somebody would jump in, like the three of us were playing and mm-hmm. going through a mission or whatever, and somebody we don't know would jump in and screw everything up for us. Like,
I think you could create your own private area, but I think for the beta, open. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure, 100%.
Gotcha.
But I think for the beta, though, it's definitely all open because I think that's probably what they want to test the most.
Because
right?
they want people to get in there and fight and break it, right? It's what they want in a beta.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Okay.
Is this different than the previous Diablo? Or did they have that same mechanic?
You could play with other people, but I don't know if it was, I don't remember if it was like open, like really.
Like big open drop-in, drop-out
everyone
stuff.
In the server could basically see you running around, you know?
Gotcha.
But you cannot attack each other, so there's not that worry. And when it drops treasure, it drops it for you.
So there's no like running, trying to grab something before somebody else grabs it or anything like that. Like it distributes it evenly, and then you only see your treasure that you can pick up on your screen. So keeps that kind of people from, you know, zonking your stuff from happening.
Right.
There's so much to the game. Like, and when I played Diablo 3, I mean, I must have replayed it probably two or three times picking different characters, because they are usually that different from each other that it's just a different fun experience. Like the thief, you know, you're like becoming invisible and sneaking around and backstabbing. Sure. But it's, again, it's all real time though. There's no, like when you're sitting there trying to do your stats, you got to make sure you're in a safe spot because things will keep attacking you. So, you know, when you try to
there's no
points,
like pause, because it's a live world. No, things are going to keep happening. I see.
Yeah. You know, you go into a town, towns are safe. So if you're in there, yeah, you goof around as much as you want. But of course, as usual, it's like the stores and there's people, you talk to them and they like give you side quests to go to. And it's so far from the beta, it just looks really, really cool. I mean, I bought it specifically because I knew I could get into the open beta. It's one of these premium games. So it's going to be like probably $60, I'm sure, when it comes out. I think it's probably, sure, what it's cost.
But did you say you already bought it, or you had
to? I already bought it. So I paid
how much
bowl.
Did it pay to get in early? Was it $60 there?
Yeah, same price. Yeah, you just bought it ahead of time.
All right. Yeah.
It was just pre-sale. That's all it was.
I got it.
But it's put out by Blizzard, you know, so they generally are known for putting out pretty good quality stuff. Haven't found any significant bugs or anything like that. But if you do, of course, they have a huge thing where people are writing in all the issues. But I can't wait till June 6th when those couple extra characters that you cannot play open up, which everyone's really excited about. So I can't rave about it enough so far.
All right.
So thanks for letting me talk, George. So, John, what do you have?
God, he never shuts up. Jesus.
I had to make it for the last segment. So how about you, John? What do you got?
So I want to talk about, not technically, but kind of, talk about something that we spoke about on this very segment of this very show back in episode 97 in April of 2021. You guys remember the topics, right? No, of course you don't. I don't remember the topics. I had to look that up. So you'll recall that one of the many little tabletop arcade toys that we got, one of the coolest ones that came out back in 2021 was my arcade put out a premium edition Street Fighter II cabinet. You guys probably remember that.
Oh, right, yeah.
It had the real ROM in it. It was like a big chunky thing. It had the six clicky buttons.
You could connect two of them together.
Right, exactly. Right. Exactly. And I liked it in the review, but shortly after the review, and I did several follow-ups back in 2021, that there were some key problems. The first was just kind of aesthetic, in which I noticed the buttons were not in the red, white, blue order. Now, that's not a big deal. I actually fixed it by opening it up and doing it. No big deal there. The second thing that bothered me quite a bit was that there was some control logic in this thing, where if you move a certain diagonal, then certain moves can't be performed. It's not a huge deal, but the more you know about Street Fighter, the bigger deal it was. And for some people, it was a deal breaker. And the third was that the joystick is kind of, I'll say, floppy. It just has a big dead zone in it. It's just not really rigid. And people have trouble getting off moves. So long story, fast forward now 2 years or so, and I was able to get my hand on what I had heard rumored was an updated version of this. So what I wanted to talk about in this segment was not so much about the toy, the game itself. It's Street Fighter II, a real arcade ROM. That's great. What I most wanted to highlight here is a very promising trend that I'm seeing from manufacturer MyArcade, which is listening to the community and addressing problems that people are finding. We've seen, Basic Fun didn't do that when they put out Defender 2 as Defender, or they put out Spy Hunter with buttons missing. You know, they just said, oh, well, $20, suck it up, right? In this case, I got my hand on the new revision. I took it apart. They fixed all three of the things that were either minor or major problems for me. The first, they put the buttons in the right order. Yay, no big deal. I mean, they probably figured that out on their own.
That's attention to detail stuff. Yeah.
It's something. That's right. The second is not broken. No reason they had to do that. They slightly changed the mechanism for the joystick and put in a more rigid spring, so it feels way, way better.
Ah.
And third, and most importantly, they actually refactored the logic on that board. They revised it from a 1.0 to a 1.1, and now all of the commands work. They heard people talk about it. They saw videos like mine on the internet, and they didn't just go, oh, well, we'll just keep selling them. They actually addressed it and fixed it. And in the new revision, you get all those things corrected. And that's commendable.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, you're right. That's 100% different than most manufacturers of these small throwaway style products, right? But I do have a question. You talked about they went to revision 1.1, which is nice. That's awesome that they fixed the stuff. Do you know if they made that revision somehow flashable for the old systems that people had already purchased so that they could maybe put a little micro SD card in, boot it, and get the proper fix? Or did they talk on any platforms of theirs like Facebook or somewhere where they said, hey, you know, we'll send you a new chip out and you can plug it in this way or something like that? Did they do any of that? Or do you think that's beyond what they what they're capable of with this particular cabinet?
Yeah, that's a really good question and a valid one, and one that many commenters on the video that I did about this very update, which, Mo, I'll give you a link to that video if you wouldn't mind throwing it in the show notes if someone wants to see this in detail. But many commenters have reached out to them. And I think it's a mixed bag. There's definitely not an upgrade path for somebody who got the first version, right? Now, that is to say, for a $50 gadget like this, you can imagine the cost of shipping back, whatever. It's a hardware change. It's not just software, which is why, you know, flashable software probably couldn't fix it. They, you know, you couldn't firmware flash the more rigid spring, for example, right? You could.
Not that part. Yeah.
But the logic part. Yeah. I'm of two minds about this, and both of them I feel pretty good about. But if you were an early adopter, you are kind of screwed. One is that if a company is going to stand behind a product, at least to listen to the community and respond to it, then I don't feel terrible about maybe having to spend a little more money to get the good version. I don't feel great about it, but I understand why this is not a software fixable problem. The other is, if you are a nefarious and devious individual, there's no reason you couldn't get the new one and return the old
the
one
Amazon
somehow.
Refund,
or,
yeah.
You know, I mean, you could. That's kind of, it's kind of stinky and kind of dirty, but I've certainly used the, you know, the Amazon library periodically to check something out I want to look at and then return it. But there's not a path to fix it straight through the company. They don't provide that. They don't provide upgrades to, but they, at least they addressed it.
I would offer up an alternative solution. And, you know, my arcade, I have no idea how to enact this, but it's just an alternative. Since you can't do the flashing of the ROM and you can't fix the spring, to your point, John, that's a physical thing.
Yeah.
Unless you were to maybe send a spring out in the little kit with the little SD card or whatever. Yeah. Since you kind of just need to get the new cabinet, maybe you could do some kind of a trade-in discount program of a loyalty program where you got the new one for a slightly cheaper price than what
That'd
you paid
really
for
nice.
The old one. If you showed proof that you had the original somehow, like maybe there's some barcode somewhere or something. I don't know.
Or maybe you got a new phone,
maybe
right?
One of those types of things.
Realistically, the only thing that changes is the control deck, and that's a removable piece with one ribbon cable. So they could retrofit if they just had the part. So you could, like, a phone, you know, if you give us your old phone, we'll give you a $200 credit toward a new phone.
Oh.
I would consider a trade-in would be an amicable and fair.
So is the control deck where the chip is?
Yeah. Control deck is where the logic board is. It's all in there.
Okay.
Yep. As far as I know.
I mean, they made more strides than anybody else.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But I think if they could have fixed the software, they would have given you away, but at least they fixed it. And that's something I don't even see happening in this space at this price point.
Good for them.
How much does it run?
So I think when I got it was 50, list now is 60, but I've seen it on Amazon for as cheap as 43. I'll give you that link as well, Mo, to throw in the, so.
Please.
$43 for, this is a great cabinet for that. And with those problems fixed, home run.
Absolutely.
Home run. Yeah. All right. So again, not the cabinet, just the company. I think it's really cool. George, what about you? I know you've been actually playing a new game.
I have been playing a new-ish game. Mm-hmm. So it's new to me. I'm going to start with that. And this is part of my ongoing new series from Humble Bundle for the Turkey Syria Earthquake Relief Bundle.
Right.
We talked about it in the last episode. I'm going to talk about it each time I play one of these new games. And there are a lot. As I had mentioned before, there are, something like 130 items on this,
it's ridiculous.
70 of them are games or some ridiculous amount. And what that boils down to is each one of the items that I got in this bundle equals out to 23 cents for what I paid for the bundle.
Winner.
That being said, in today's episode or release or whatever, I played a game called Ghost Runner. Now,
I've heard of that.
It's not an old game. Like a lot of times with Humble Bundle, you get games that are 10 years old or even older. This game came out in 2020, so it's really only 3 years old, which is
barely.
Nice. It's got overwhelmingly positive reviews. I don't really know how to classify this game, but Mo, you might be able to follow along with me. So imagine if you took Shadowrun and put it in a first-person shooter that was solely about parkour.
Wow.
Okay.
So you've got a street samurai type of guy.
Okay.
Who has to run around and he needs to break a guy out of prison. So there's a little bit of BioShock because you got this guy in your ear who's like, come do this for me and I'll help you kind of thing.
Okay.
And of course, at the beginning of it, he's teaching you how to do the things because something has happened and your brain has gotten messed up and you don't remember everything. You know, that's a pretty classic
Amnesia.
Trope in games, right? Yeah. you run like at different speeds. You can do this like time slowdown thing, kind of like what's that Red Hot game, John, that you used to play all the time?
Super Hot. Super Hot.
Yeah. There you go. Mm-hmm. Yep. Kind of like that. But then you also, like, if you jump at a wall surface, you're running alongside it like something out of Assassin's Creed or whatever.
Okay. Oh, okay.
You need to take out people. You're jumping down on them from above, and you're making these amazing leaps from thing to thing.
Okay.
It does have a couple of interesting modes that I haven't played yet. One of them is called a kill run, which is apparently you're just trying to run through as fast as you can, killing everybody you have to, and get through that segment of the game.
That was pretty self-explanatory. Like, yeah.
And then there's another one, which is like, I haven't played it yet, but it appears that it's clearing out everything in an area, kind of a thing. So like
completing,
you know,
if
you're trying to gather all your stuff, it's that kind of a thing.
Okay.
But the part that I'm playing right now that I've started is more of a storyline mode. So a little bit like BioShock, but in the future, samurai kind of guy running around. And I'm going to tell you, I don't know if it was a AAA price before, because right now it's $30 on Steam.
Still, at almost 3 years old, it's probably
worth. Yeah, that's impressive, actually.
Yeah, but it visually looks like it could have been a AAA title if it wasn't already.
Mm. I mean, how's the gameplay? Is it fun?
The gameplay is fun. I really enjoy it. It's difficult, though. I'm a little too old, I think, to keep up with it.
Does it have an easy mode?
I kind of wonder if it does. I haven't found one yet, but I kind of need that at this point. Oftentimes, I'm noticing that when I do my wall run and jump down to kill a person that's in front of me, I can't find them because it's all first person view, and you've got this narrow view. Yeah. And I'm trying to squirm around and find them to hack them, and you get no time to kill them. Like, these AI of these things trying to kill you, they're good. Like, within 2 seconds, I'm dead every time. But you start back over really close to where you got killed. So not a thing where you have to go back like and go through several steps all over again.
Oh, I hate that. Yeah.
It feels like all the checkpoints are really close to each action point that you have to deal with.
Like, they know where you might find a challenge, so they're helping you out. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't frustrate me. I want to enjoy your game. Help me, right?
Right, so that's good. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, they seem to understand that they have set this game up for you to die a lot at first. Okay. And so they don't want you to have to go all the way back to the beginning of the level.
That's good. Glad they thought that through.
Well, yeah.
And so at 23 cents, you think you're getting your money's worth out of it?
Yeah, you queries.
Well, I mean, I played it for 23 minutes.
So done.
Before the podcast. So there we go. I'm good.
Yep.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.
If you're a diehard Gen X grown-up, you can pledge your support by clicking join on YouTube or by becoming a patron at genxgrownup.com/patreon.
You've shaped it in your mind. Total performance. Now the all-new Toyota Supra brings it alive. Supra Power, created by a 3-liter 24-valve, 200-horsepower engine. Supra Suspension, racing type, double wishbone, fully independent. Supra Cockpit, where you perform. The new Toyota Supra. Performance without compromise. Now the Supra Dynasty begins. Who could ask for anything more?
Before we wrap up this episode, we always like to take just a second here toward the end to talk about the things we're either looking at now or looking forward to between now and the next time we get together and talk. And I will get started just a couple of things. It's a little light this time. Actually, these things I'm not super amped about, but I'm curious to learn more about them. Okay. April 7th in theaters, there's a film called Paint, which is Owen Wilson kind of being a Bob Ross type character who loses his job at public television.
Is he supposed to be Bob Ross, though? Is that Bob Ross?
It's not Bob Ross at all. No. It's not a biopic or anything.
Oh, I thought it was a biopic originally. Okay.
He's a Bob Ross-ish character. Mm. It reminds me a little bit in tone. Did you ever watch the Jim Carrey TV series called Kidding, where he was kind of a Fred Rogers type character?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, it reminds me. It looks like that. It's a more like a hyper version of the Bob Ross kind of thing. And it's Owen Wilson. Hmm. So it looks promising. So cool. The next one is apparently April's when horror movies drop now. There's a new horror movie coming. Really, any time is horror movie time anymore, right? But some of them look dumb. This one looks really intriguing. I'm a sucker for a big papal exorcism kind of story. And this one is called The Pope's Exorcist. And it stars Russell Crowe.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of the trailers for that.
And he's basically the Pope's main guy when it comes to exorcisms. And this kid is possessed, a la The Exorcist, and wants him to, I guess the devil wants to get in the Pope's exorcist. It looks like it'd go either way, but it has Russell Crowe that lends a little bit of credence.
The best part is the trailer part, right? Where he's in front of the review board and they're like giving him shit. And he's like, you got a problem, go talk to my boss.
Talk to my boss. Like, and the other part that I love is the possessed kid, bring me a priest. And they cut a few scenes later and there's a young guy standing there that gets thrown out of the room. Wrong priest. Bring that one to me. I'm looking forward to seeing that. It's April 14th, also coming to theaters. And the one I'm probably most looking forward to really is just on television, on Paramount Plus. About 2 years ago, Mike Judge revived Beavis and Butthead for a new season of episodes. A second season is going to be on Paramount Plus on, appropriately, of all days, 420.
Oh, jeez.
I think I said it's finally another reason to be sitting on the couch. So on that day, not only can you sit at 420 and enjoy your weed, I guess, but Beavis and Butthead season 2 kicks off. The first season back was really fun. So more of it, and Mike Judge, Beavis and Butthead. He's doing all the voices again. Can't go wrong. Mo, what about you? What do you got coming up, man?
Let's see. So obviously the Dungeons & Dragons movie, that's coming out this week. So definitely looking forward to seeing that one. The Tetris movie is coming out soon.
On Apple, isn't it? Apple TV?
Yeah, it's on Apple TV.
Like is it okay? Yeah.
And so that one, I don't know why, but I really want to see it.
I know why you want to see it.
Why?
Because somebody did a really awesome trailer reaction for that movie.
That must have been.
That's why you want to see it.
There
you
go. It was, ding, 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 course. Ding. But probably what I'm most looking forward to right now is a show coming out April 4th called Beef. I don't know if you've heard of
Jesus
this
Christ.
Yet.
Is this like the sequel to Lamb?
No, it's totally different. It's a TV series that is basically these two people get into like this road rage incident, like on the street, like,
a beef with one another kind of beef.
And they try to rage off the road, like a serious, serious road rage thing.
Ooh.
And they apparently just can't let it go. And it's it's a series of shows. So it's like, I guess it consumes them like over time.
That feels like an expansion of the Russell Crowe film that came out like 4 years ago.
Which one's that?
He rear ends a lady in a car and she's giving him shit. And then he just tracks her down and tries to murder her.
Whoa.
I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah. Oh, my wife made me go watch it because I'm so bad in the car yelling at people. She's like, you need to go watch this to stop doing it.
I was about to say, is this a George biopic you're doing? What is Beef is about?
But I mean, and it's got like a really great cast, like Steven Yeun's in it, Ali Wong's in it, and then some people like Joseph Lee. I mean, pretty good name. So it looks weird, which I like. It just looks like a weird kind of Fargo-y kind of just weird sort of show. So that's what I'm really most looking forward to right now. So how about you, George? What are you up to?
Well, now that I've done a couple of them, I'm really looking forward to doing more of the Turkey Syria Earthquake Relief Bundle games. It's gotten me a little bit more into playing video games more than I did. And now that I've got this cool gaming chair from my family and I've got the nice Xbox One Elite controller thing that they gave me a while back, it's a little bit more enjoyable. And the games in this bundle so far, I've played two and it's made me really want to play the next one. I'm just playing them down the list. I'm not going alphabetically or anything. It's just whatever's the next one on the list. Like when I saw Ghost Runner, I was like, oh, that's probably some old knockoff game or something. And it turned out to be fun. So yeah. Second thing I'm looking forward to is the docudrama, bio drama kind of thing called Air,
which
is all about the Michael Jordan Nike shoe deal.
Look interesting. Damon or someone's in that one, right?
Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, helped write the script. They produced it. And it's really interesting because I just saw Ben Affleck just the other night on Jimmy Kimmel. He was talking about the situation, how it came to be. They spoke to Michael Jordan at length before they even started pre-production on this thing. And they were asking him questions. And the one question that he highlighted in the interview was, they said, okay, well, you know, and he's telling him, well, this guy has to be in the movie because he was essential to the story. And this guy, Michael Jordan's telling Ben Affleck this, right?
Yeah.
And then Ben Affleck says, well, okay, I kind of need some advice from you. Who would you like to see playing your mother? And he's like, there's only one, Viola Davis. That's who has to play my mother.
Really?
at that point, that character only had two lines in the film.
Oh, geez.
So they went back and rewrote the entire script to make worthy of Viola Davis being in the role. And that's why she's centered and focused. And they made a point of never showing the actor playing Michael Jordan in more than anything than a background, because they said, if we show you him as Michael Jordan, he's too famous. You're going to go, that's not believable.
Yeah, gotcha. That makes sense.
So that's why I'm looking forward to it. But the thing I'm looking forward to most, which I'm going to talk about the least, is most pick Dungeons and Dragons. But I'm looking forward to it because I'm going to get to see it with my entire family in Orlando at that special AMC at Disney Springs.
We've already bought the tickets. Nice theater.
That's a nice theater.
Oh, so looking forward to that. You guys are only like two and a half hours from Orlando, right? Yeah. I don't know why that's not your main theater.
I can't do 5 hours of driving for a 2 hour movie. It just doesn't make sense.
If it's a good enough movie, that theater almost makes it worth it.
You don't know till you see it. You might waste 5 hours for a bad movie. That's the problem.
Yeah. That would really suck.
Yeah.
Give us a new scale, right?
Right.
AMC or drive to Orlando.
How many hours would you drive to see this movie? That's the new scale.
I mean, as long as they get rid of the Nicole Kidman bullshit.
Oh my God.
It's worth it.
I'd drive an extra 20 minutes just to go to a theater where that's not playing.
Yeah, me too. She scares me. The way she looks on that thing is frightening.
And I like puppets and can't handle her eyes. I mean, that's just bananas. Before we get out of this episode, I do want to take just a second to thank another brand new patron who've thrown their hat in the ring and said, I want to support Gen X Grown Up. We want to thank you, Anna Marie. Anna Marie headed over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and said, we like what you do, Gen X Grown Up. I want to help you do it and join a roster of amazing human beings, including many of you listening to this show right now. You know who you are. Thank you so much, Anna Marie, and all of you. It means the world to us, and it's making our dream that much closer to becoming a reality. So again, if you want to join Anna Marie, head on over to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. Click on the button that says, I want to give you money and make it happen. It's really easy.
Yeah, we don't need somebody to give us $10,000 a month. We just need 10,000 people to give us $1 a month.
Exactly right. And you can be one of them. You're listening now. You can be one of them. That's right.
But you can give more than $1. Thank you. It's okay if you give more than $1.
It's okay.
We won't stop you, but don't feel obligated. That's right. That is going to wrap it up for this edition of the show. Don't worry, we'll be back in 2 weeks with another one. But next week, that's our backtrack, where we pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. And I'm so excited about this backtrack coming up, because we're going to talk about my favorite class in school, which was lunch class. Oh, wait, it wasn't a class. It was just where I screwed around. And not only are we talking about our memories as Gen Xers in school during the lunch break, but we have reached out to our many followers and fourth listeners on social media, and we have lots of input from them. So we're going to be reading your comments, reacting to those, talking all about the Gen X experience of school lunch. We hope you will join us for that one. Until then, I am John. George, thank you so much for being here, man.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Always fun, man.
Fourth listener, it's you, though. We all three appreciate most of all, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody.
Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more washing shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be
french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up. This part won't make the show because I've forgotten. What did you say? We were talking about, you did something. What was the last backtrack? Playing Dungeons and Dragons in school. That's what it was. You got in trouble for that. I'm not going to use it now. It doesn't work. I messed it up.
I'm not seeing the connection there, but.
I'm not either.
I don't remember getting in trouble for Dungeons and Dragons at school. Oh, you're talking about it in North Florida. I got you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was thinking
about
when I first played Dungeons and Dragons in school, in middle school.
That's okay. I've wrecked it now. I'll just read his email. Comics or music or books or whatever you would prefer.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.